life, universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvia.
Hello once again and welcome to the Spirits Work Show, the metaphysical and spiritual show with a difference. I'm Sylvia Avery.
I'm Mick Avery. Hello.
We are mediums who have chosen to serve humanity through our gifts of spirit communications, and we focus on education. On this show, through Mick's deep trance mediumship, we are able to bring you the truth as to the nature of your existence direct from the other side of life. And today we'll be discussing all sorts of things with Spirit Guide Gregory Hay. And if you'd like to join us with a question, either relating to the topic that we are discussing on the show at the time, or maybe another situation, obviously it's better if you can keep it on topic. But to be quite honest, last week we went off and we did a whole show on the other subject. And I'm not sure actually that Gregory is not going to come back and talk about that today as well. So anyway, if you'd like to join us, it's not a readings-style situation, but to basically join in with the general conversation with things that you wanted to know that possibly a spirit guide could help you about in a general way that everybody can gain something from, basically. So it's general questions. And it's a toll-free line in the U.S. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's only a quick call. And the number is 001-530-876-3222.
Well, hi. I'm Mick Avey. And as well as Spirits Work on bvsradio.com, every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific, that's, where are we now? 6 p.m. GMT, which is really brilliant to be able to be here. We have another radio show anyway, and that's called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, which is, I think, what's that?
Midnight.
7 p.m. EST and 12 midnight.
GMT.
Yes, GMT. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, book and Akashic reading, or any of the other suggestions, other readings that we have, we suggest you go visit our websites, which are at www.spirit-teaching.com and also at www.spiritsworkradio.com. I'm not quite sure if that's still out of order at the moment, but it was because we had a bit of an attack. Anyway, hopefully it'll soon be back online. Anyway, as regular listeners will know, each week live on the show, I channel an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who is the main spokesperson for a group of evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. Gregory himself had an earth life in the early 1700s in England and has come to share the wisdom he has gained access to with those of us still on the earth. We don't spend very long with chit-chat at the beginning of our shows because we try to save as much time as possible for the spirit world, and Gregory Hay always has plenty to say. Unfortunately, I miss every single show because I'm the instrument and I have to wait to hear the recorded show sometime later. At the moment, I think I'm running over a year late everything.
Isn't it?
I think, I don't think I've heard a show in over a year. I haven't actually done anything to them either, so it means we've got masses and masses of raw data everywhere. But anyway, that's the way of it, and that's where I'm going to go now, is just have a complete out-of-body experience. Hopefully they'll find me something better than a rock to lie underneath because the last few times has been pretty weird, I have to say. A little bit lighten up, please. Less with the rocks.
Okay. All right then. Well, bye, Mick. Gregory Hay is the spokesperson for the White Cloud Group, who are made up of scientific minds of all description, along with ordinary people. They're an educational team and have come to give us access to information that we need to know in order that we may move towards a more harmonious and peaceful way of life, to understand the nature of our existence and help us to evaluate our lives differently. When Mick is in trance, his spirit and his consciousness, as he was saying, is transported and held by the scientific members of the White Cloud Group so that we can enjoy the complete personality of spirit guide Gregory Hay. So this isn't Mick passing information from the spirit world to us. It's actually completely lights out for Mick, and spirit guide is the complete personality whom we have the pleasure of enjoying the company of every show. So as Mick said, you can find out more about us from our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. You can have actually an Akashic reading with Gregory if you want to have a one-to-one and find out all sorts of really good stuff about yourself. It's really to do with your core energy and who you are as a spirit being, and your spiritual development and your pathway in life, your soul's purpose and that sort of thing. And you'll find out who your doorkeeper is and all about your gifts of spirit and all sorts of good stuff like that. It's quite different, and you can find out more about that on our Akashic reading page on www.spirit-teaching.com. And I can, if you want to get in touch with me and find out more, and I will help you, and I would look forward to hearing from you anyway. So I say thank you, and hello, Gregory.
With love and light. Blessings be upon your pathway, dear friends. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, little bird.
Hello.
Good day.
Good day. So, and what a lovely day it is. What are you going to talk to us today about?
I thought, my dear friends, seeing that we had continued the discussion last time over the matters of infanticide, mm-hmm. and some behaviours of some people to eat their children when not wanted. That means that they would take their life at birth and then eat the remains of what they had. In many respects, I was not being judgmental by saying that I am, in a sense, against this practice.
Oh, why?
Why?
Please be judgmental.
Well, yes, quite so. But, however, I am well aware that there have been many tribes of the physical state who have done just the very same thing and actually ate one another when they were not stillborn or when they were not in various states of disarray physically. So that in many respects, for example, the various different Maori clans and that kind of situation used to feed regularly on different tribes. So does that mean that was wrong too? Perhaps it was part of the reason why the Christian ministries that went into these different countries, mainly Africa and also the, as I say, the Australian and also to a certain extent, but mainly the places like Indonesia and various parts of New Zealand and that kind of thing, where they actually had a great deal of trouble with many beings to do with the ways in which they ate one another.
Okay.
Does it mean then that you would rather, perhaps for some people, they would might rather turn back the pages of the clock and revisit those times? I cannot believe for one second or moment that within my own pathetic judgment, I suppose, that I could ever reach out to say that that was something which was equitable, that was something that was manageable. I understand that some people, human beings, eat the afterbirth, shall we say, of the practice of doing that is quite different to eating the child itself. But they eat the afterbirth because cook it up, because it's actually very nutritious, naturally so.
Well, we're talking about specific, like last week we were talking about the Chinese. That's how it all came about was,
yes.
We had a phone call and it's been in the headlines and highlighted about the Chinese, certain Chinese practices of eating their children. So we're talking about cannibalism here, basically.
Yes.
And you said that there were other races in India and possibly other areas of the world where that happens as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is true. This is in order to keep down the numbers of female children because females are not considered worthy.
Mm, yes. Well,
I don't quite understand how that people think that. It's probably obviously a male-dominated race which feels that is the question.
Mm, yes, well, you know, so basically it's not even a case of having stillborn children. It's murder and then, I mean, you know, there's so many, you know, different situations within that. So to continue on with that...
To continue on with that, then, I am then going to say, so what is it then that you consider is all right to perceive that you would stop the willing life of a child? If you are saying then that it's not all right for human beings to decide to kill a child because of its gender, are you then going to say that it is all right to kill a child because it has a disease or because it has some other situation which is genetically means that it's inferior in some other way, not purely because of its gender?
Some sort of autism or...
Yes.
Disability.
Yes, mongrelism. Why would you as a race want to stamp out mongrelism because that's something... as though you are saying that it's a great deficiency for your race to have a mongoloid child. I have not met one child who has been that way touched by their genetic principle that has then meant that they are not loving, or that has then meant that they are in some way or other not desirable to have within the midst of others. I have not met one.
No, I think a lot of that as well is to do with it's difficult to manage, maybe, a child like that for some people, mentally, emotionally, and also financially, because it can be for a very long time. It's not something that, you know, they're going to become 18 or 21 or whatever and then leave. It's going to be the same for an awful long time, and many people can't cope with that. So there are going to be so many different reasons for doing this as well.
Yes, but the point is, however, I have to point out here that the situation with a child of that nature, you just have to have the patient's perseverance in order to help them to understand how they may live themselves.
I know, and a lot of people haven't got that.
I am well aware of that.
You know, many people are themselves, you know, sort of maybe prone to depression or for whatever reason.
Difficultly struggling,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, the life is not that stable for many people.
I understand.
As it is. And I guess that's a lot to do with it. I mean, if anybody wants to call in and give us their opinion of this, whether they have a child that they have kept against all odds and can tell us a story or just share your views on this, I think it's very important to air these situations, basically. So the phone lines are open. It's a free phone in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756, and international callers, it's not toll-free, and it's 001-530-876-3222.
So what I'm saying, you see, is that if you genetically have the principle, unbeknownst to you, that you will generate a child with your husband or wife, whereby there are certain chromosomes or certain situations active within its DNA, whereby it has a 1 in 3, 1 in 25, 1 in 100, 1 in 10,000 chance of being this or that child, and you go ahead with the pregnancy and then have that child, you wouldn't dream of eating it.
No.
At the point of it being born, simply because it's genetically malformed.
Mm-hmm.
However, the, as you say, rightly so, little bird, the way that parents react to that child will depend and vary depending upon how those people decide that they are going to cope with this situation. Particularly if it's a situation where the parents are already knowing that that child is going to be born in that disfigured way, perhaps because they've had resonance from it with mm-hmm. ultrasound or some such thing, where the actual mirror image of the child has been relayed quite clearly and emphatically for you to see with the wonders of modern science, of course, then it's obviously going to be a matter of choice. Those people then, with their loving kindness, continue to nurture that child. In many other ways, it may well be that I am not suggesting here for one moment that there would ever be a case for to euthanize such a situation. Not really for any reason. Apart from that of where you are having situations of children, which then become adults, obviously, if they're lucky enough to do that. Not saying that there is anything wrong with a child who then passes. It is a matter of the genetic occurrence.
Mm, you're saying as long if they live that long.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's really a matter of how that group of cells is able to manage with its life. However, if you obviously have given birth to a child who is so disfigured that it has terrible trouble breathing, so disfigured that it's never ever going to have a normal life, what are you going to do? Are you actually going to say, well, we'll just struggle on and see how far we get? That is not necessarily something which is normal practice, perhaps one might think, particularly if you look at the animal world. Yet you are human beings, so you're going to look at it differently in any event.
But isn't that our duty of care, though?
Absolutely so. I'm not saying that it isn't. If you look to how other beings manage this kind of situation, they usually eat them, or they will just simply send them out to the natural world in order for the rest of the natural world to deal with the situation for them, not on their behalf.
You're talking about animals now.
Yes, of course. But so I'm saying then, there obviously becomes a parity sometimes between what human behavior humans think is acceptable and what human behavior human beings think is unacceptable by terms of their reference to their animal-like behavior. Are you going to then sequest to that kind of behavior where they turn animalistic, or are you going to restrain oneself and think that you are nobly rising above it and yet at the same time watching your loved one going through immense amounts of pain in order to satisfy your curiosity of how you are desiring to appear in faith and in good conscience, echoing, so say, the will of God, that you actually put this child through all kinds of torment in order for it to eventually have a death that you would hope would appreciate or be appreciated by all of those who knew you. Am I being a little glib? Well, the situation is, I'm saying, that when you are looking at this situation, are you going to treat the person that is your loved one, perhaps who has multiple sclerosis, perhaps who has some other terrible wasting disease, that you're going to deny that person the ideal time for when they wish to say, I've had enough of this? Or are you going to force them always to be at your will and your beck and call? The matter then comes through this whole raft of situations of many different kinds of times and advantages. So the mother and father then of a child who then grows into an adult still has these potential disasters within their midst, within their state, genetically perhaps, but maybe they haven't simply shown their pathway yet. So that person still walking along in their pathway, embracing life. It is then surely a matter of that person's choice or reference to their life as to whether they wish to make their time of it or not. That's like, in a sense, I'm not saying that I'm encouraging people to take their own life or to commit suicide in any way, shape or form. But that there does come a time when human beings have to realize their own, from their own position, from their own tenable point, if you like. Can I really put up with this much pain? If you are looking to a society to give you guidance, they will always show you one way or another. There is never a middle ground, never appears to be something which is both condoned and allowed, and yet held back the conditions of, or treated as a judgment of illness, or treated as a judgment of negativity. That person is then considered perhaps a murderer who would allow such a child to take its own life or would even cause it. There are many different situations of rational human thinking and also thinking in the spirit world. I have to say, we have many, many situations in the spirit world where thousands upon thousands of individuals talk about this incessantly, as to whether it is right for one person to take another person's life, if it is as a matter of God's choice, or if it is a matter of their choice.
Okay, so this week we had a case in this Britain with a lady,
Purdy, yes,
with a lady in a wheelchair. She's got multiple sclerosis, and she wants to go to Switzerland when the time is right to be euthanized, to take her own life.
Yes.
And she wanted to know if her husband was going to get prosecuted for helping her to do that when he came back.
Yes, that is true.
Which is quite interesting. And that's really still ongoing, but she's won the first part of it, I believe.
I understand that she's won the right for clarity.
Yes.
Because there is no clarity.
Mm.
I understand there are many people who have been assisted in taking this course of action, usually because they know that their whole situation of their physical life has become untenable. They are still able, usually, to walk and talk. And that means that they have made their own choice to do this because they know what the outcome eventually will be and do not wish to suffer that kind of fate. When you consider, dear friends, that most people in physical life either suffocate in one way or another or pass through heart defects,
mm-hmm.
That is the main of the situation. Yes, I know that there are many situations surrounding the brain and all of that whereby people pass, but the majority of the situation, whether it's to do with the respiratory or upper respiratory, whether a person drowns or simply passes because of a cancer or whatever, it's usually because they suffocate.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a way of passing I would wish to will upon anyone. So having said that, I am not saying that I would tolerate it within my mother, because that's the way she went.
Mm-hmm.
And in many respects, my father too. So in this whole situation, we can see that for the majority of people, it's simply that they cannot get, the air just simply doesn't fill their lungs.
Mm.
This then may seem as though this is an activity, then perhaps more people would like to go through. I cannot see it myself. I think that it would be far better if people went in their own sleep, in their own time. Would that not be more choosing and more care filled?
Well, the thing is, we don't do it with animals. You know, how many times have we, all of us, we've been to the vet, and you know, with our pet, and they've said, you know, well, the best thing for him and, you know, or her, and you don't want to go and see them suffer, so you do it for them and you feel much better. And yet for human beings, it's totally different. Very strange.
Yes, I find it very difficult to observe when so many people are gathered around a bedside of someone who is plainly very worried and extremely concerned about their own impending mortality, as they continue to, in some states, even scream for their own life to pass, simply because of the ways in which human beings may not have managed the person's medication or something like that. So the way in which you will find it tolerant for a person to pass, oh well, yes, he had a good death or something like that, some other kind of glib explanation, it simply seems to me that it's almost a way of, why would you want to have that within your mind? Because there are many hundreds of thousands of millions of beings on our side of life that we have to repair, simply because they've gone through that process, or they've seen and watched their loved one go through that process. Your lives are littered with people who are mortified at what their parents actually went through at the state of their passing.
Do you think that we've got it wrong? The balance of how we struggle to keep children, let's go away from the infanticide part of it at the moment.
Yes, yes.
We struggle to keep our children alive
at all costs.
At birth.
Yes.
And from then on. And then when we're old and we're on the way out, it doesn't seem to matter so much. It's slightly, there's not quite, and it's a bit of a generalization, but there doesn't seem to be quite so much care, really.
Like it's a slant on ageism.
Well, Ben. Yes, do you know what I mean? Well, you've just said it anyway, really. I mean, it's like, you know, we do let people suffer because, purely because we've only got so many drugs, so many situations that we can do for people. And it does seem to be a bit one-sided there. It's okay on the way in, but not so good on the way out.
Yes, I do not understand when you have this amount of technology in existence at your fingertips that you could actually make it so much better. I'm not advocating euthanasia by a certain age or anything like it.
Well, no, and I think people are freaking out about that, though, aren't they? I think they're thinking that, well, and then let's face it, we don't really trust that, you know, the lawmakers and that sort of thing. I mean, everybody's got a story to tell.
I understand that.
So I think probably it's the misuse of the law that people are worried about.
Yes, and possibly also there are many who have a great deal of mistrust about their doctors or those who run hospitals, that kind of thing.
Mm.
How many people, for example, then do you know whose parents have passed in a hospital-sized situation which they were actually dreading would happen, and it happened. In this respect, you will see almost as though the whole situation becomes full circle. Purely and simply, it doesn't mean it any less. It makes it even worse because it was oftentimes going to be situations that were unavoidable. It's a matter of all beings who are involved in that case having the same amount of duty of care to that patient as one another. And it only takes one for that level of care to subside. And then you have a situation where perhaps the patient overnight or something like that is not cared for in the same way as others would have cared for that patient
on
another night.
Mm.
That, yes? And then simply you have, just because that one person wasn't giving that patient water through the night, means that they go downhill the next day, or their condition worsens tragically and diametrically so. Almost as though they've given up all of a sudden all the will to live. But it's purely simply just a matter of giving that person water.
Okay. If you'd like to join us, the number is 877-876-5227 in the US. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free like the other ones, but it's 001-530-876-3222. So it's even more of a reason for us to get the messages of the spirit world really out into the arena as far as wide as we can, isn't it, really? Because obviously, now you've said before that when people are really, really sick and do want to just let go, they can, but it's fear that stops them most of the time.
Yes, of course.
Fear of the unknown.
Yes, because they don't know what it's going to feel like.
Yes, so it's funny, isn't it? Because we, spirit workers, light workers, sort of focus not so much on the older people. So maybe there's something there that should be done. Maybe there's an outlet there for the elderly folk to learn about spirits. I mean, I know that a lot do, but do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, of course.
I mean, what about, somebody was saying something about meditation for old people in the old people's homes and that sort of thing.
Yes.
You know,
I think that that would be a splendid idea.
I mean, it would also cut down on the medication as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, of course. Absolutely, because much of the medication is really produced in order to combat some of the fears or disadvantages they feel that they've had during their physical life and then are, in a sense, left with to ponder before they pass.
Hmm.
Often then, many of these situations are simply fears, symptoms of their own life experience. And naturally enough, it's very difficult for some people to overcome those.
Yes.
We feel for them so.
Well, we want the mindset and attitude towards aging and death to be totally different for future generations. I mean, you know, it just adds to the fear of the world as well, doesn't it? So embracing spiritual
yes.
teachings and the spirit world and that sort of thing can only be a good situation.
Yes, absolutely so. So perhaps part of the conditioning then of this is really about putting one's life in track, putting one's life into the right situation, the right temperament.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, however, there are many situations where people of the older generation, they're looking back and thinking about their lives and oftentimes tinged with regret and different kinds of negativity, perhaps. Particularly with others who have passed before them that they have missed during their lives. Or maybe it's part of their thread of understanding that they have endured throughout their physical life is the memory of how their friends actually physically passed. And that is something which then continues to hold fear for them. Because they saw them pass in a horrible way. Remembering, of course, that all physical attributes of a person passing are merely that. They're just the memories, then, of that method of passing brought on and passed on to the spirit via the whole consciousness tree.
But there's an entire generation cloistered in care homes that are missing out on the access to being able to meditate. And,
yes.
You know, it's an injustice, really. Isn't it?
It is.
So, is there a different approach to teaching meditation to the elderly than the normal techniques with, you know,
No.
With a specific agenda of helping them to reduce the fears of dying, I mean.
No, there isn't.
No.
That's the beauty of it. It's exactly the same, Stacey, as we would teach a child.
Right.
That's the beauty of it. So perhaps then your upcoming piece of work, dear friend, ought to be entitled Meditation for Young People and Old People.
Oh, yes, because I'm doing a meditation book for children at the moment. Which should be out on an e-book soon. Yes, maybe we need to do it for the older people.
Although, of course, you won't have to teach them about picking up their socks and shoes.
No.
And toys.
No. I think it's a bit late for that.
I think it is a little bit late for that, yes.
Mm. Yeah. So, what can you tell us about the actual process of passing and the situation that, say, for instance, you've talked about what elderly people are saying. What would they say? What do they say to us when their loved ones are still here and they are in at the end of their life, but they're being kept alive against all odds and that sort of thing? Is there any gems of wisdom from the other side that we can have here that you can relay to us?
Yes, I have to say that for many who are kept on ventilators and other kinds of machinery, those who are kept alive in some way for no other reason other than perhaps that there is simply not the will medicinally to allow that person to pass, the majority of those who come to us simply say, well, why didn't they let me go?
Mm.
And they see it actually as quite a selfish act that they kept them there in the physical life, you see?
Mm.
That they didn't help them to pass.
Mm.
That would have been a much more courageous and loving gift to have given.
You get locked up.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? It's not the sort of thing you see that people talk about.
No, I understand that, because there is so much fear and negative attitude which is attached to it. Usually, I have to say, at the behest of most religious circles, that has been created. It's part of the reason, is it not, why it is that most medicinal carers are on a bound to keep that life going no matter what.
Mm. Yes, I mean, religion aside, it's illegal to take someone's life, full stop.
Yes, of course, I understand that.
Because even in the countries that you were talking about, China, India, whatever, that actually take the lives of their children, girls, like you say, mainly, it's not done with the grace of the government, is it, surely?
Well, one would hope not.
And yet everybody knows about it. I get very confused about that.
So that means to say then, don't forget, friend, that governments are not run by one person, they are run by many. And there will be many who are in positions of power who will condone certain activities on the one hand and yet throw up great objections to many other forms of situation behavior when it suits them, or when perhaps their palm is not crossed with the right amount of silver.
Do you ever get... Oh, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, is that a little cynical me coming out there?
I think so.
Once again.
I was just going to say that, do you ever get people crossing over that, they've had a really traumatic long lead up to their death? Do they ever sort of get there and start shouting and say, why did you let me go through that, to their guides or love or whatever? Do you ever get people taking it out on on the spirit world when they get there?
No, not usually, actually, surprisingly enough, except perhaps maybe if it was a situation where a person was being physically tortured by somebody else.
Right. Yes, why did you let it carry on?
Yes, quite so. But that, once again, is a system of events which is down to someone else's behaviour and is really at their behest. They're in the situation of power and control over that position. Therefore, it's not ever going to be something that we can just butt in. I understand that there have been some miraculous situations where those of the spirit world have interacted with and on behalf of others, perhaps to save them from some kind of interaction that would have otherwise taken their life. However, those situations are very rare and continue to be so, because it's extremely difficult for those on our side of life to actually have an effect on the physical side of life when in that kind of condition, that kind of situation. Even when we want to have an impact upon the physical world, it's very difficult, extremely difficult, sometimes almost insurmountable, depending upon the kind of negativity or depending upon what degree of negativity, where it has come from. That may be affecting that one human being.
So are there certain parts of the planet that it is easier? I mean, I know there are areas, obviously, of the world that are going to be easier for you to, shall we say, play in.
Well, I could say, my dear friend, but you could actually go to a place like, let us see, various centres or vortexes that are supposed to exist upon the physical planet, which are to do with the interactive stargates or something like that, to do with the universe or the spirit world, some other kind of some such energy focus or fulcrum, whereby a person could take another person and shoot them, and simply by them being there will not make any difference upon that energy or to that energy, nor will they even feel that energy being created. So removed are they from the everything else other than the act that they want to create. So yes. I'm saying then in many respects you may think of yourself out of a paper bag, but at the same time you're still in the paper bag.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But are there energy, I don't mean energy centres, vortex, that type of thing. I just mean, are there areas of the planet that is easier for spirit to work through? You know, to actually do things physically. I don't mean physical mediumship either. I just mean to work with the energy of the areas rather than others.
Yes. But it still, once again, though, really hinges upon what other areas of interactivity that have happened before between spirit and the physical world, or between spirit and spirit.
Because we know there are certain areas, buildings, that are better to be in than others, for a start.
That is very
true.
We've
talked to that, about that in great length, about making your home, you know, more accessible for the spirit world.
Yes, that is quite true.
Natural stone, natural wood.
Yes.
Water.
And the things that you think and feel and say within them are naturally going to bring about a different form of vibration within the timber of that building, within the actual focus of that building. So that's going to be exactly the same as if you were there or walking within a wood or even in a field or a barren moorland. The interaction that you have with that being is going to be as long as you feel it is sacred.
Yeah. So, but for us to encourage our spirit friends and our progression spiritually, it's best to actually create an environment that is as natural as possible. Would you agree?
Yes, I would completely agree with that. Yes. That doesn't mean to say, though, that it's going to be devoid of spirit if you, in fact, live in a mobile home or even in a telephone box.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No. No. And to encourage Feri, what do we have to do?
Talk to them. Ask them to be with you. Bring about things of goodness and beauty and love and laughter in your life. These are the things that they respond to willingly. If you are a person who has courage and wishes to offer it to others, to be in the path of others, to help others over their journey, then these too are going to be blessed. These are blessing bells that you sound. They are the ways forward for you as a being to try to resonate your energy with the spirit world. That enables you to think differently and to act differently and resonate differently within your life.
So what sort of fairy would we encourage into our homes as opposed to outside?
Well, that depends entirely upon who it might be that could be listening to you. I'm not being stepping aside this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, then, if you were outside, then obviously there are many possibilities, because Fauna Fairy will never go into a building, or very rarely. So Fauna Fairy are the fairy of those beings who are actually linked to different forms of physical species and subspecies. So you have different forms of Fauna Fairy who adopt very similar genetic lines, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that they have a certain situation within them, which means that they're only visible partially or for a very limited space of time, simply because they live in a different dimensional stratus. That means that they are not within your physical charge, not within your physical membrane, within your way of vibration, because their vibration is a lot different to you. Most fairy that you see are either little fairy who are generally going to show themselves as small lights. They won't show themselves as a complete being.
Mm-hmm.
But also certain forms of aqua fairy are also quite obvious too. They too will show themselves in blue light, but they will be more predominantly around water field environments.
So can we encourage fairy into the home, a specific type of fairy?
I would not say specifically.
No.
I would say that for a fairy to come to you is a matter of how you react to them and how you react to other situations in your physical world of life.
Okay.
It is going to be very rare for a fairy truly to be moved enough to be in your vibration to allow you to see them. That's a matter of it. It's a matter of their allowance. You can demand all you want, but it's whether they allow you to see them. And that may be simply because they do not want to enter into your vibration.
And that's what I meant about, working on our homes and our environment. But yes. You mean that we have to work on our own vibration as well that? We can't just...
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Absolutely so.
Mm.
Fairy are very particular.
Mm. And, we've been writing a book for years. On Fairy, but I'm not getting very far at the moment, I'm afraid, but we might have a little something out soon, just a little taster of it. But we've gone full circle here, haven't we?
Yes.
We've talked about just about everything. But actually, it does tie in, because referee are very often...
They're very often associated with both stillborn children and also oftentimes those who have passed when very young finally decide after a very long time of the physical passage of Earth that they decide that they want to be perhaps to merge into the fairy world, and that enables them to have some other aspect of life of by which they are then very useful energies for other beings within their life experience.
Yes.
As fairy, for example, will usually help the organization of the natural world.
Or the different species.
Within it,
yes, attending the individual situations.
Yes.
So flowers, trees, water, animals,
yes,
that sort of thing.
Yes, quite so.
So do you have much to do with them?
They actually tend to keep a parallel universe in many respects.
And I mean, I know you did, and you do when we are writing parts of our book. But
yes, that's very true, but that's because it's by special agreement. Ordinarily, they wouldn't interact that much unless the need arises.
Well, is it difficult for them as well at the moment,
yes,
with the Earth
plane
being so negative?
Extremely difficult, yes. Extremely difficult. They have to be very, very careful about how they operate. And in many areas, they have fled simply because the human activity is so violent and uncaring.
How does this affect them if they're of a parallel universe?
It affects them because the negative vibration affects everything. It moves right through the universe. Sometimes, of course, human beings can be affected by negative vibrations which have come from other planets or other star systems, not of your known universe.
Oh, right. So not all of it is necessarily from the negativity that human beings have created.
No. That's right. That is quite true, friend.
And how would we know that?
You wouldn't.
And is it something that actually engulfs the whole planet, or will just settle in certain areas and then...
It wouldn't necessarily settle. It would just pass through and project onward.
So then you might get really traumatic situations happening in its wake.
It is possible for that to happen, yes.
Because you've said before that negativity drifts like a cloud.
Yes, that's true. That is very true.
It's projected on purpose from other planets, or is it just a byproduct of
activity, negative activity. So that's the same thing, dear friend, as if your planet, for example, is at war, and you have hundreds of thousands of people passing very quickly, then these are matters which are sent to the universe.
Right.
In exactly the same way that the dropping of the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki were matters of the universe.
So you're saying that other planets could get our clouds of negativity?
Yes.
As well?
And dire consequence, yes. In the same way that you do on your physical side of life.
That's interesting. Okay.
Well,
thank you very much, Gregory.
With love and light. Blessings as ever, my dear friend, little bird. God bless upon your journeys, everyone. God bless.
Okay, well, thank you for listening to Spirit's Work. I'm Gregory Hay and Sylvie. I'd just like to mention our website again. It's www.spirit-teaching.com. As well as Spirit's Work on the wonderful BBS radio on Sundays. We have another radio show, Spirit Teaching, on artistfirst.com on Tuesdays. Look us up. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.